Argument is Cadilla v. Gonzalez. Mr. O'Quinn, since Mr. Cicini is ill. So let me ask you, what did the immigration judge, or what do you regard as the most serious contradiction that warranted disbelieving his testimony?
Well, Judge Posner, I think there were several omissions or contradictions that were significant. I think the single most significant was the inconsistencies regarding the alleged death of his brother, because it wasn't just a difference in timing, but it was a difference with respect to key facts, with respect to the sequence of events, and with respect to who the individuals were who supposedly intervened on their behalf to get them out of incarceration. And so in his testimony, for example, he had the brother dying well before the presidential election, which was a key event. And it was an incident where the father had intervened on both his behalf and his brother's behalf. But in his statement, he said that he and his brother had been detained as a result of demonstrations following the presidential elections, demonstrations that were in response to the presidential elections. And then he had members of the SDF, not his father, intervening on his behalf. So that being his most serious allegation, the death of his brother, the dramatic inconsistencies there are quite significant.
Why does it matter, given the fact that you don't seem to question that the brother died? Isn't that the fact that would sort of jump out from that
testimony? Judge Wood, I don't think that
he's certainly consistent, at least in his story, that his brother died in conjunction with these kinds of political activities.
Well, to be sure, he alleges that his brother died.
Well, and there's no inconsistency there, right?
Well, there's no inconsistency with the allegation that he had a brother who died.
That he had a brother, the name of the brother, and that the brother died, and that it was in conjunction with these political protests, whether it was before or after the presidential election, whether it's the father or other people who come to them, that there's a core there that's absolutely consistent.
Which, of course, is all predicated on assuming the truth of his testimony.
But Judge Posner said, you know, one of the reasons not to believe him was your testimony is inconsistent. And some of the inconsistencies that the immigration judge points to are silly. They don't make any sense. Others might be more important, and I had very much the same question. But at least here, within this alleged inconsistency, or certainly inconsistencies of detail, is the core of a consistent story.
Well, I suppose if that were the only inconsistency, Judge Wood, then we might have to hang our hat on that. But, of course, it's not the only inconsistency. And another significant inconsistency was the fact that during his testimony, he did not affirmatively mention what he alleged to be the most egregious acts of violence that had occurred against him.
I was confused at your emphasis on that, because when you think of the way this hearing comes about, the attorney thinking erroneously that she's going to get the continuance, all of a sudden he's there all by himself testifying, it seemed to me if you're not telling a worse story orally, you could easily think that the judge has in front of him everything you've written. You don't need to repeat again everything. He's answering the judge's questions. He's answering the government's questions. Why is the failure to repeat the burning rubber and the different things that happen so fishy?
Well, I think that, as this court suggested in POP versus INS, when you're asked to list specific incidents of mistreatment, it's reasonable to expect that you're going to list the most invasive among them. And, of course, these would have been the most invasive acts of mistreatment. And the judge specifically asked him, had he been harmed physically? And that's at AR 147. And with respect to the total omission of these electrical shocks that he refers to in his statement, the judge had again specifically asked him if he had been harmed, and after he spoke in very general terms about beatings, the judge specifically asked if they did anything else to you, and yet he did not mention those. So under those circumstances, the omission of what would be the most invasive...
Did he mention the burning
He did not affirmatively mention it. What happened is that the judge questioned him about the incident, which in his statement he had said there had been the burning rubber. And then after going through that with some detail, the judge pointed out that it was inconsistent with his statement, that he had not made any reference to the burning rubber, and he didn't offer any sort of explanation for the inconsistency at that point. There are other inconsistencies, too. Again, the testimony here is riddled with inconsistencies. He refers to other incidents where the duration, the circumstances, the location of his incarceration was different.
And should we think of any of this in conjunction with his post-traumatic stress disorder? I mean, you know, if you've been through things like this, it could all blur in the sense that you know that these various things have happened, but asked several years later, you know, was it in August or October, maybe you would confuse it. I don't understand why it's...
Well, two points in response to that, Judge Wood. First, these are not just inconsistencies about dates. They're inconsistencies about the substance. But in addition to that, even if the court is going to consider the affidavit of the social worker, which was untimely, her affidavit does not suggest that any of what he's been through would have resulted in memory lapses. She talks about it being about it perhaps giving rise to depression and some other things, but there's nothing in her affidavit that goes to this issue of memory lapses. One other point that the immigration judge did not focus on, but goes with this sort of the meta issue of credibility here, was the issue of not having any sort of corroborating evidence in the sense of his siblings appearing, and you have the issue of
this. We know why the siblings didn't appear, because this lawyer thought she was going to get the continuance.
Well, and actually, to that point, Your Honor, one point that I wanted to make that I don't think was particularly clear is while he testified at his hearing that he had a brother named James and a sister named Francesca who had received asylum in the United States, if you look at his application, he mentions three siblings, none of whom include James and Francesca. He refers to a Julius and a Beatrice, both of whom resided in Cameroon, according to his application. And he went out of his way to include an additional page in his application to add his sister Beatrice. But James and Francesca, the two siblings who are supposedly here in the United States, who would have supposedly testified on his behalf if he had had a continuance, are nowhere to be found in his application. And that's another point that I think goes fundamentally to the petitioner's credibility.
I was troubled by one of the inconsistencies that the immigration judge stressed. That had to do with the spelling of diehard.
Your Honor, the circumstances in which they give rise to the judge's concern about that are that he was specifically asked about the use of the phrase diehard, H-E-A-R-T, in his application, and was questioned about it and was asked, was this a phrase that's used in Cameroon? Why is it that you use this particular phrase? And he volunteered that it was a mistake, that it should have been the more common expression, die hard. Given that background, seeing this same incorrect turn of phrase in the supposedly corroborating evidence is grounds for the judge to question whether or not...
Anyone inquire whether it is the way it's spelled in Cameroon?
They did, Your Honor, and I believe if you look at AR-207, that's where the questioning took place, and he was specifically asked if it was sort of a phrase that's used in Cameroon, and he said that it was not, that it was simply a mistake. And
but
so,
you know, these mistakes occur. There's a whole book full of these kinds of things where people are phonetically changing things, and it's actually quite amusing in some instances, but I would say perhaps even more broadly whether someone has looked into whether die hard is morphing into die heart would be an interesting inquiry. People hear things, you know, sometimes to amusing effect.
To be sure, sometimes coincidences do occur.
It's not just a coincidence. It's an evolution of the language that I'm talking about.
In fact, all you have to do, try Googling Die Hard and Cameroon.
I'll try that when I get back.
You know, you'll find?
I don't, Your Honor.
Well, you'll find the Cameroon Post, which is the newspaper of this Anglophone community in Cameroon. They spell Die Hard, H-E-A-R-T.
Well, it's quite interesting to see that.
I would suggest that, you know, not a lot of care goes into the collection of evidence in these cases.
With all due respect, Judge Posner, the petitioner was specifically asked about this, and if it's true that Die Hard is an expression that's used in Cameroon, as apparently it may be according to your Google search, then it's something you'd expect him to have volunteered, and I don't think it's unreasonable for the immigration judge to rely on the facts that were before him when he rendered his decision. If there are no further questions, I see that my time's expired, and we'll rest on our brief.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. O'Quinn.
Thank you, Your Honor.